Morning. Bill carries us through the devastation of time and then brings us to a complete view of what's in store. And I love this portion of the book because if we could just get completely in his skin on page 13, the rest of it would be completely unnecessary. A couple things that I like to bring to your attention from my view. Because I tend to get arrogant, and I need to remember some things. This is about people awakening spiritually. Bill woke up dead drunk. True. That's what it says here. He was sitting there drinking gin with his old friend Abby, to the point where right afterwards they put him in the hospital because he was getting ready to go into DTs. That's pretty drunk. At that point is when he woke up. That's what he says. Abby had said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" And by the way, the word is conception, not concept. A concept is a very rigid, boxed-in structure with no room to grow. My sponsor destroyed all my concepts so I could have a conception. Just something to play with at 2:30 in the morning. Dead drunk. That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered for many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. And he's drunk. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. And I need to remember that because I have, in working with others, have added requirements. I know none of you have ever done that. Before they could make a beginning, they had to meet certain requirements of my own making. It's only a matter of being willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself. That's where I make my beginning. Now, I got that from watching him. I was fully awake when I got here. I was 5.5 months away from my last drink and fully awake. And I believe anybody who gets here is awake, or they wouldn't get here. So at that point, I need to make sure that my job is not to define their state for them. It's simply to help them stay awake until they can clear away the stuff that keeps putting them to sleep. The icy intellectual mountain. My old ideas, that's all that is. Bill has some wonderful images, and I have to sometimes translate them from my own head. I was sitting at doing a meeting in a reformatory one time, and same thing, I was just reading the big book to him. And this kid mentioned, I don't understand a word he just said. His imagery didn't fit this boy. So I sometimes have to run that through my head. Dr. Silkworth's statement that it takes an entire psychic change, for me that simply meant I need a new mind. I could understand that conception. But I was awake. So was Bill. They put him in a hospital anyway. What I want to do this morning, first of all, is let's have the entire experience of the steps. If you'll get completely in Bill's skin, you can have the experience. Then we can go through how you keep it. Because you'll notice, if you're all experts, you know that you have a spiritual awakening before the third step. And the whole purpose of inventory is to find out what kept you from having that permanently. Okay? It's not so that you can have one. You've already had one. A spiritual awakening is any time any alcoholic anywhere understands any part of the truth. That's a spiritual event. Got it. He knows that. Did you hear that? He went, That's an amen. That counts. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. You ever seen anybody in DTs? Scary. They die sometimes. They have convulsions and break their arms and legs and throats. And all kinds of bad things happen. Or they go insane. It's just hallucinations. Some of us used to live for that. There I humbly offered myself to God, as I then understood Him, to do with me as He would. My life is no longer my business. Period. The conduct of my life is certainly my business, but my life is none of my business. To do with me as He would, without reservation. I place myself unreservedly under His care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without Him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins. I had a little trouble with that word. All my troubles are with words. I'm a word mechanic. So I went to a priest to find out about it, an alcoholic priest. He said, sin is anything that separates me from God. That's all. We took all the other definitions off, and that works for me. Anything that separates me from God. So I faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch. I have not had a drink since. There's a conception of God for you. A newfound friend. Even in the midst of my sickness. What happens when there's a newfound friend is I have hope. And that's the only message I can ever carry anyway, is hope. You either hope you can get what I've got, or you can hope you never turn out like me, but I bring you hope. Okay, doesn't matter. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. Let me bust a bubble for you. I keep hearing from my grandchildren and great-grandchildren when they do inventory that they go into the fourth column looking for their part. As long as I think you have a part, I'm not on the beam here. I'm never to be critical of them. I'm to set aside any wrongs they may have done entirely. They don't have any part in this. I'm entirely at fault. I go look for where I was wrong. I've seen it hold people back looking for their part. Okay. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. I like that a whole lot better than saying make amends, because that gets messed up too. I can interpret amends to mean I'm sorry. And my sponsor told me one time, he says, you're never to use that phrase again. You've been sorry your whole life. You get to say I was wrong. I wish I hadn't done that, but I did. You don't ever get to say you're sorry. And I'm to write all such matters to the best of my ability. I'm to take some effort to try to straighten out what I did to you. I didn't get free making amends. I don't believe you get free making amends. I got free getting willing to make amends. You better be free before you make amends. Some of them take years. If I have to wait till they're all done, I'll die. I just have to be willing to put in the years if that's what it takes to straighten the matter out. I'm free of it. I've got to help you get free of it. We're going to explore all this later. I like making inflammatory statements on Saturday morning because it gets the deal going. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Ah, please. We'll get to that. I am conscious of the kill people, but that was different ways. nothing so brazen as coming out front. Phil Gutierrez that I knew was the kindest, gentlest, softest human being I've ever met. He was a walking example of who I am and who at that time I wanted to be. Okay? He taught me how to touch physically in a penitentiary. Well, that's risky. But the quality of Phil's touching was one that we do out here if we're doing it right. We're all a bunch of puppies. And we need that human contact. One of the greatest things you can do to heal somebody is just touch them, shake their hand. See, we all think we're alone. The minute you touch somebody, they can't be alone whether they want to be or not. You make a lie out of that just by touching them. So we learn to touch each other with our hands and with our voices and with our eyes and with our thoughts. It's the same thing. You're not alone. What do we tell them when they come to us? If we're doing it right, welcome. We need you. You're important to us. Here, let me get your coffee for you. Now, we do it because we know the poor guy's going to slop it all over the floor if he tries to. But the intent's the same. Why don't you come with us? We're going to a party. That's pretty important stuff to somebody who hasn't been invited anywhere for a long, long time. Yeah. A bunch of you got to Fellowship of the Spirit this year out in Colorado. Just before the little conference, we have a potluck at my house. And just whoever's in town just shows up. And if you bring food, you bring food. It's just known. You can come to my house. I can't tell you how touched I was this year by the number of cards I've gotten, not thanking me for the conference or anything wise I said. They have all said, thank you for opening your house to us. Strangers from a strange land. See, that's what you did. You opened your doors to me. Before this has any meaning at all, before this big book, we must first set the stage. It's imperative a man's mind be cleared so that they can actually hear our message. So I watched these guys because I didn't believe them. And I watched Bruce walk what he talked. He'd tell us something on Saturday and Sunday and I'd watch him all week. And he did what he said he was going to do. Spiritual people are really aggravating, you know. They tell you what they're going to do, then they go do it. They tell you what they won't do. And no power on earth will get them to budge from that. They're always on time, just aggravating as hell. I had some fun with one of the kids the other day, since we're just telling stories. Our conception of God changes frequently. And we all go through a period where God got me the parking space. Right? Like he's going to put the universe on hold to get me a parking place. But that's a good place to be because at least you believe now. You got something working. But from my viewpoint today, it's a little different. I took one of my guys to lunch. I have some feet problems from time to time, and we couldn't walk, so we drove. And we went to Dario's, which is a place for people who have a serious garlic deficiency. They can fix it. It's a little Italian restaurant where mama meets you at the door. And you better eat everything on your plate. Never a place to park, ever. We pulled up in front, car pulled out, we parked. He said to me, isn't that nice? God got us a parking place. No, he didn't. We were on time. Had we been a minute sooner, that car wouldn't have pulled out yet. It would have been too early. Had we been later, the guy in front of me would have gotten it. We were on time. And that's what I think this business is about, is being on time. The only time anything can happen is right now. May you find him now. Not next week. May you find him now. I can't live on what I found yesterday. It's a nice memory. It stood me well. I need to find him now. It's all about being here now. You can't love somebody who's gone. You can only love the memory. Well, that's enough of the sermon. Why don't you talk about something important?
Do we have anyone here that's relatively new, let's say less than 6 months sobriety? Have any newcomers? Great. Great. Don just mentioned it. You really are crucial to us. You really are. You're of great use to us, and you're being very useful just by being here. And I want to talk to those folks who are fairly new for just a moment. And you know, I told you I managed to be given the gift of physical sobriety back in 1977 and up through late 1989. I managed to just basically hang on. Dry in AA. Not sober, not recovered, no spiritual basis for living. And part of the reason for that was that when I would hear people like Don talk and some of the other old-timers, God, they just sounded so good. They really did. Jesus Christ, they sounded good. In fact, they sounded so good that I drew a conclusion. I can't do what it is they're doing. And I sure as hell can't do it right. And there's a basis in fact for that. Fact is, I have never done anything right my entire life. And the fact is that I usually start to do something, and if it gets a little bit tough, I quit. So that's more truth. See, these are facts about my life. I sat in a meeting one night, and I thought, God, I wish I had what these guys have. But I really did, and I was nearing that 13th year of sobriety, and I thought, hell, there's just something dreadfully wrong with me. I'm incapable of doing what it is they're doing. And they began to tell a story about some rather shabby behavior that had just occurred. And at that moment in time, I identified with them, and I thought, wait a minute. If they can yell at their kids and do the same kind of things that I'm doing and still look like they are right here in front of me, I might have a chance. What I'm suggesting to you, just suggesting. You're listening to a couple of real alkies, and we do some shabby stuff, and we have some shabby thinking from time to time. We found a solution, don't get me wrong. It was one that was given to me. And I found out a way to get that thinking to change, and I found out a way to clean up the mess. But there's going to be times that I don't know of any other way to say this. There's going to be times that I'm going to sound a whole hell of a lot better than I am. Okay? Please. Believe me. Now you say, oh, wait a minute, I got to have more than that to go on. And I'll just tell you. Well, I've been doing this for a while. And a couple of summers ago, my lovely sane wife, we were living in Cumberland, Rhode Island. And it was summertime, and she said, boy, these kitchen cabinets need to be painted. And I said, well, honey, maybe they need to be painted, but I'm not much of a painter. And she said, that's all right, I'll do it. And so I said, is there anything I can do to help you? And she said, yeah, would you take them down off the cupboards, the doors down, so she could get inside the cabin? And I said, you know, again, magnanimous guy that I am, I said, sure, honey. And so we got those doors down, and over a few weeks' time, she got all these doors painted. And by this time, it's coming into July, and it's starting to get pretty hot, but she gets all those kitchen cabinets painted, and those doors are all painted, And we come home after an AA meeting, our little Thursday night group, and where I'm 3 feet above the ground. I'm just almost levitating. And I look at those cabinet doors there, and I'm feeling about a half inch tall because she's the one that's done all the work. And I say, you know, and I tell you what I'll do is I'll put those cabinet doors back on for you right now. And she said, darling, she said, you're awful tired, and it's awful hot tonight. Why don't you wait and do it in the morning? 9:30 at night. I said, I'm alky. We're going to put those doors on now, tonight. Once again, sanity tried to prevail, and she said, honey, she said, really, I can look at you, you're tired, why don't you wait and do it tomorrow? No, I can get it tonight. So I got out my electric screwdriver, and as any of you who have ever hung kitchen cabinet doors know that some of the little hinges and little screws go way up near the ceiling, because that's where these they went all the way to the ceiling. And you know that you have to stand, they're so high you have to stand on top of the cabinet, but they're not high enough that you can stand straight up. So you're hunched over, and you're over in the corner trying to put that hinge up and that little screw in the right hole so the door will still fit like it used to. And you also know in the summertime the heat, heat always rises. In summertime, all that heat is near the ceiling, right where you're about half standing straight up. And you know those little brass screws that go on those hinges aren't very big. And they have a tendency to drop. Well, you put them on the tip of the screwdriver and you try to get it in there and they fall off. See, Don will talk to you about lofty spiritual shit, and I'll talk to you about what's this living really like. So I'm putting this screwdriver in there. I mean, these little screws and these little holes in there drop them off. And wouldn't you know, when they hit on the kitchen cabinet, they don't fall to where I can pick them up. No, where they fall is down the little crack between the cabinet and the stove. And now I can't retrieve it. I'm running out of screws. Well, it's late and you're tired, and I'll just tell you the rest of the story is it doesn't take long before the air is getting just a little blue. All spirituality has gone. My wife recognizes those storms as they approach the horizon. And it's so bad, she has to go off into another room. And I'm thinking, Jerry, you're a spiritual giant. Straighten up. More screws drop, and the next thing I know, there are cabinet doors that are being sent airborne with loving, kind words. After a number of failures, the thought crossed my mind, perhaps I should wait until morning. And meanwhile, I look at a dear, sweet woman who is not even comfortable in her own house because of a raving lunatic. I've not said a word to her. She just doesn't care for that kind of behavior. And I need a solution for those moments. See, the damage has been done. The damage has been done. I need a solution. And what was the solution? I had to go to her and I said, you know, darling, you were dead right. And I was dead wrong. I should have waited until morning, but my behavior is abysmal. And I'll promise you something, I'll never do that again. And bless her heart, she's a sane person. She said, honey, you can't make that promise. And I said, well, darling, would you tell me what promise do you suppose I could make? Then she said, you can promise me you'll try never to do that again. And she was dead right again. And that's the promise I made. The good news is I haven't done that again. I don't do cabinet doors anymore. We need a solution to those moments where our mind just goes clear off into the sunset. I don't know where it goes, but it sure doesn't function like it should. And for those of us who are real alcoholic, we can't tolerate. You ever yell at your kids? Yeah. And see, I've done it. I've started, and I see what my kids are doing, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to do that. And somehow you end up doing it. And then you feel again about a half inch tall. And I'm not saying that's okay. Don't get me wrong. I do not use that as an excuse. Oh, that's okay. I didn't drink today. I can't buy that anymore. Truth of the matter is I need to have a solution to straighten that mess up and see is there any way that I don't ever have to do that again. So that little deal on the kitchen cabinet took some inventory work. And then I tell you what, you newcomers, you say, well, what good are we here? I'll tell you what it is. I get to share that story with you. And that's a form of a fifth step for me, see? So you're being immensely useful to me, and you're letting me participate in this little spiritual journey by your all being here. And we get to do this together. We get to do this together. I used to a long time ago, especially when I was in a terrible spot during that 13th year of sobriety. I thought there were people in AA up here, and then the rest of us were down here. And then I was way down underneath all that. Don's mentioned it already. We're a family. My family, I didn't realize this, my family has never been judgmental about me. I didn't know that. I used to think that they were making terrible judgments about me. Once I began this little spiritual journey and began to get right and have a different mind and a different way of seeing things, I realized my family was never judgmental. There were times that they knew I was sick. They knew there was something terribly wrong with me. They didn't know what it was either. And that's what we get to do in here. Have any of you ever had the experience where somebody tells a terrible story at a meeting, and you listen to that story and you think, I know what they just told me about themselves, but God, I like them. See, that's still a miracle to me that somebody can tell me a terrible incident, and I think, God, I still like them. God, they're a great person. See, I get to tell you stuff. Hell, I just told you a story about airmail and those cabinet doors, and I have a real strong sense that nobody's going to hold that against me. They probably think I'm weird, but the hell I know I'm weird. See, those are the kind of little incidents that have occurred all throughout my life that have kept me apart from other people. And ultimately, it makes it necessary to think in terms of taking a drink again because of a certain state of mind that exists when you have one of those little brainstorms. And if I have enough of those little brainstorms, eventually I'm going to find living and waking up to them intolerable, totally intolerable. So I truly needed a new mind. And that's not without a certain amount of discomfort. But the most important thing of all is that I really believed that I had to do this right, and I knew I couldn't do it right. I've always known that I can't do something right. I told you, I'm just a grand example of how not to do this thing, and you'll hear a lot of that. But I'll also tell you that I did it the best I could. See, I'm real strong on this. Don't get caught up in the methodology of doing it right. I can't do it right, and I know that. I heard an old-timer say one time, he said, I'm a born loser. And I do, I'm a born loser. And when something works, even though I don't work it right, and it still works because I worked it in the spirit of the thing to the best of my ability, and that was the best I could do. I pulled out an old inventory one time. It was an inventory I did 13 years sober, but it was the first one I'd ever done, the way it's laid out according to the book. And I was so damn proud of that, that I saved it. Not that the contents of it were so well, but I thought I had really done it precisely according to Hoyle. I mean, I was positive that I had four columns and blah, 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 blah. So I saved it, and a few years later I had the very good fortune of getting to go through the book with a bunch of guys, and we were standing there, and I thought, you guys are having trouble getting these columns right, and perhaps I need to show you my first inventory. So they went home that night, and I went and dug it out the next couple of days, and I opened it up to see if I could make sure where it was, and got it, and I thought, it was garbage. Hell, it just looked, I don't know what it was, but it sure didn't, I didn't recognize, it wasn't perfect. I mean, there's about 25 pages of nothing truly but whining. And I didn't know that. I mean, my memory, see, it showed me, told me that I'd read. Toward the tail end of that, you could begin to see that there was a little semblance of following the instructions. But I'm going to tell you something. I had the most marvelous experience through that because I was awakened to the truth about me, which I didn't like. And it was very clear, and a great gift came out of that. And I just did it in the spirit of doing the best I could do. Just doing the best I could do. And that's been my experience throughout this whole thing. God, I'd love to say I'm stick to the letter of the law. And I have probably said that more than once. the truth of the matter is I can't do it right. But I can do it. I can do it. I don't know if any of you have ever done it the way I've done it before, and that you have a little checklist off the wall. You look up the steps, and yeah, I've got it. And yep. Then you run around whining, this doesn't work. Those are some of the fun things that didn't feel fun. But those are some of the fun little things that I look back on. But again, I share with you one more time. Don's touched on it. As a result of what we do, I've discovered that I really can be okay. And I'm okay with you. See, there's the thing that I like. I'm okay with you. I'm not misleading you. And if there's any value to that at all, I'll share anything that I have. I'll share any experience that I've had, strange as they may be. And I will hope, too, that you find what it is you're looking for. And that's our whole purpose of being here. It's getting a little late, Don. What do you want?
We will start out in the morning with Bill's initial experience. Then through the day, we're going to share with you some things, how we do some things here, what we've done and how we do them, and how we see that. We just want to share our experience with you. But I want to offer you a caution, something I have learned that saves an awful lot of time. Somewhere along the way, I made a decision to turn my will and life entirely over to the care of God and live a spiritual life. From that point on, nothing else will work because of the choice I made. So it's all or nothing. Nothing else will. It may work fine for somebody else who hadn't made that decision, but it won't work for me. And I've tried a whole bunch of other things. I've never left this path, but I've had occasion where I got convinced one time that I had been in spiritual high school and it was time to get on to spiritual college. I may or may not tell you about that one. But I want to tell you what I found having made that decision. And my approach to this is based on this. I spent years with the mistaken idea that I was a human being trying to have a spiritual experience. I had lots of them. The truth of my life is I am a spiritual being having a human experience. What time? 9:15? In the morning? It's 10:15 here. 9:30 tomorrow morning? Okay. Is everybody through for the night? Always, you have a question. Go ahead. Fire away. What is your question? Once you're on a spiritual path and you start making human mistakes, well, that's because you're in the human condition. But you treat it spiritually. Oh, well, we'll talk about that. You aren't ready to go to bed, and I am. Let me just expand on that just a little bit, since you won't let me get up. Waking up to the fact that I am a spiritual being having a human experience has made me completely available to the entire range of the human experience. There's nothing to be afraid of. Bottom line of the human believing I was a human being was the fear that I would die alone. Guess what? Everybody dies alone. I don't care if there's 100 people in the room with you. You're going to die alone. Okay? And it ain't no big deal. I've already died 3 times that I can remember. Okay? It's just no big deal. And quite frankly, at my age and condition, it's not going to be a big deal. Okay? I'm not afraid of being afraid anymore. It's a passing thing. Okay? The great value of all of these contrary emotions that I feel is that I identify with you. The essence of the spiritual awakening is one of unity. I'm no longer set apart. You are me, and I am you. And I know that. Okay? And when you're hurting, I hurt. And when you feel good, I feel good. Sometimes I don't even care. Please know that. Sometimes I just really don't give a damn how you feel. I'm very busy feeling myself. Okay? And I just want to tell you, get over it. Give me a break. And then I write him and try and come back and say, I'm sorry, tell me about it. In my human condition, I don't hear anything. Because I'm busy, when you're talking to me, thinking about what my response is probably going to be. So that you will respond properly to me, so we will blah, 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 blah. As a spiritual being, I hear everything you say, and I don't hear with just my ears. I hear with all kinds of new ways of hearing. I pay attention to your eyes and to your body and to all and to the inflection in your voice. And sometimes you'll ask me a question, I go, huh? Because I was busy hearing you, not your words. Words are a good carrier for us, that's all. My wife and I'm going to try to describe over the weekend my relationship with my wife because it's the same relationship I have with God. It's one of respect, complete trust, complete love. One of the nicest things that she and I do together is nothing. Yeah. We spend hours just being together and may or may not talk or do anything. It's just nice when she's there. If she's not there, I'm still complete, so is she, but it's nicer when she's there. Okay? I don't have to hook up with her. There's no separation between us anyway. Same thing with God. I hear people in AA saying, I don't feel connected. Connected to what? Is God some kind of a light thing that you plug into now and then? No. Where I am, God is. That's the experience. Where I am, God is. And I don't have any illusions that I know anything at all about what I just said. If I can tell you who God is, I don't know what God is. I can tell you aspects. Someone asked me a while back, and these are just meanderings of an old man. Someone asked me, don't you believe that God is love? And I must tell you, in all honesty today, I don't know for sure. If he is, and that's all he is, I'm in trouble. Because it'll be based on my understanding of what love is, and that's a very limited deal. But I expect that's probably a true statement, that God is love, because from what I've seen, it just seems to be that way. But God is also much more than that. God is everything. And I have to accept that knowing that I don't know what everything is. Okay. No. Oh. Oh. Give me an amen, brother. It's also a very practical deal. When I'm conscious of the presence of God, there is no tension or stress. Well, I'm supposed to practice this in all of my affairs, huh? That's what it says. And I was constipated one morning. It's all or nothing. And I was busy trying. And it occurred to me that when agitated or doubtful, we pause and ask for the right thought or action. Now, when I pause, I conceive within me a garden, and I go there, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I'm his own. I tarry there. I just hang out for a bit. You know what that'll do? That'll relax you. And it wasn't 5-10 minutes. It was over. Okay? This is a very practical way to live. I used to go off into la-la land. Well, still do. I believe that communication between people is quite possible without using words, and they can be hundreds of miles away. But I can get locked on that and spend weeks trying to become a telepath. I found that it's a whole lot easier to call home than to say, honey, are you there? Okay. It's the same relationship I have with God. I'm going to give you in my opinion, this is the perfect, complete prayer. and then we're going to go home. I don't know of any prayer better or with more power than this one. God, that adds to it. All you have to do is invoke His presence and He's there. All this work through the big book is so that I can get to a place where I can actually do that. It clears away the things that are distractions from me just saying, oh, you're here. Yes, something to play with when you wake up at 2:30 in the morning wondering, why the hell did I go to that deal last night? We'll see you all about 9:30 in the morning. Okay.